Welcome to another Outdoor Fitness podcast with Tina Vindham, the host of Outdoor Fitness.
My guest is Dr. Brian Wansink. You've heard of Dr. Brian Wansink because he talks about mindless eating, and it's the name of his book called Mindless Eating, Why We Eat More Than We Think. He's been appointed as Executive Director of the Center for Nutrition Policy and Promotion at the USDA. And Dr. Brian Wansink, welcome back to Outdoor Fitness.
It's great to be with you again.
Oh, I remember talking to you, and I hung up the phone last time, and I said to Scott, our producer, I said, that is the most fun I've ever had talking to a scientist. You keep it light.
Oh, well, thanks. We're not all crazy here in boiling test tubes.
But there is a science to snacking, and there's a real science to mindless eating, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we've done over 200 studies at the six universities that I've been at in the past that show that we are incredibly influenced by our environment, even though to a person we deny ever being influenced.
You know, I was just at the hairdresser right before coming in today, and I was talking to my guy who works on my hair, and I said, yeah. I was going to be chatting with you, and he said, well, okay, so big deal. I said, well, you know, it's a lot to do with the environment, the way we eat. I said, and if we socialize while we eat, we'll eat 30% more, and if it's really dim lighting, we'll eat even more. And it goes on and on, doesn't it?
Well, and the crazy thing is that people cannot believe that the things around them have any impact on them because they want to believe they're too smart to be influenced by, you know, the size of the bowl they're eating from, or they're too smart to be influenced by how far away a candy dish is from their desk. But what we've shown in our studies is that, you know, simply if you have a plate that's a little bit larger, you're going to eat on average about 28% more food, but you're not going to say you're any more full than if you have a smaller plate.
The interesting thing about that part of that study is that you actually worked with nutritionists on that, didn't you?
Yeah, actually, one of the things we did is that just to show how ubiquitous these cues are that trick us up and how nobody's immune to them, we had a big ice cream social for some of the world's greatest nutritional scientists, and they were there to kind of celebrate a promotion of a colleague. But what we ended up doing is we gave people either 16-ounce bowls to put their ice cream in, or we gave them these big 32-ounce bowls to put their ice cream in, and gave them either small or big ice cream scoops as they walked through the line. And you give somebody a bigger ice cream scoop and a bigger bowl, even if they're the leading expert in the world, they take about 51% more ice cream. It's crazy.
What is all that? What is that about? Because they're educated. They're so aware about this. This is what they do for a living.
Yeah. Well, largely what goes on is that the average person makes, on average, about 250 decisions about food every day. And it's not just, you know, do I want Fruit Loops or Corn Flakes for breakfast, but it's like, how much are you going to pour? Do you want a second bowl, skim milk, whole milk? How much milk? Do you put sugar on it? Do you want a bagel or a Pop-Tart? But all these things are made just instantaneously, these decisions. So you're not really aware of making all of them. All you just know is that you kind of came in, ate breakfast, and went to work. Well, similarly, the thing happens when we aren't even in an ice cream social. We don't pay attention to how much we're dishing. We might pay attention to which ice cream we take, but it stops about there. So as a result, we're tremendously influenced by the cues around us, and the cue can be as simple as the size of a bowl or the size of an ice cream scoop. It suggests that it's normal, typical, reasonable, and appropriate to serve more, and we dutifully do so.
My guest is Dr. Brian Wansink. He's the author of Mindless Eating, Why We Eat More Than We Think. There was another study that you did with the endless soup bowl on the table. How did that all work?
Well, what happened is we did this great study. We've got to step back a second and give some context. We did this great study a while back when I was living in France. We asked French people, 150 Parisians, how they knew they were through eating dinner. And when we asked them, they'd say the top reasons were, well, I know I'm through eating dinner when I no longer feel hungry. Or they'd say, I know I'm through eating dinner when the food no longer tastes good. Asked the exact same question to 150 Chicagoans a couple months later, and they said, I know I'm through eating dinner when my plate is empty, when everybody else is finished eating, or when the TV show I'm watching is over. Now, with the French people, those are all internal cues. It's something inside them that's saying stop. With the Chicagoans, those are all external cues. They're all looking at something around them, whether it's how much is left in their bowl or what other people are doing or whether the TV show's over. It's external cues that are suggesting to them whether they should stop. Well, so we asked ourselves, well, what would happen if a bowl never emptied? Would people just continue to eat until they blew up or something? And we created these refillable soup bowls where we drilled holes in bowls, drilled holes in tables, and connected this food-grade tubing from the bottom of the bowl under the table to these big six-quart pots of soup, and basically just invited people in for soup and saw how much they ate compared to people without with normal bowls. And one thing we found out is that if you give people a refillable soup bowl and let them eat for 15 minutes, they'll eat 73% more soup.
Oh, man.
But if you ask them, hey, you know, how full are you? You know, they won't claim that they're full because they say, hey, how could I be full? You know, I still have half a bowl of soup left. And this ends up being the real danger in that we don't really pay attention to these internal cues, but instead we use visual cues largely to tell us how much to serve ourselves and when to stop eating, and those can really throw us off.
I've been chatting with Dr. Brian Wansink. He's the author of Mindless Eating, Why We Eat More Than We Think. And Dr. Wansink, you did a paper with former Governor Mike Huckabee. And it was really interesting, and it was called Demarketing Obesity. And it's not about the blame game. I think a lot of us want to jump on the, oh, that's the media, it's the advertising, it's the packaging. We've got to take responsibility here, don't we?
That's true. And it's a very easy thing to do, because once we can point a finger at somebody else, we can essentially say, hey, you know, I don't have to worry about it. It's not my fault. So, you know, if we end up having kids that are overweight, for instance, we can point a finger and blame somebody else, whether it be, you know, a company or an industry or a lunch program or whatever, on our child being overweight, then all of a sudden we don't have to take blame for the fact that we're bringing home huge bags of potato chips and that we're baking cookies every night.
Yeah. Well, I think also it's important that we know, as human beings, we are drawn to these really strong taste preferences that you outlined: fat, salt, and sugar.
Mm.
And a burger would probably be a perfect demonstration of that, because we've got the fat, we've got the salt, and then the bun is a lot of sugar.
Yeah.
And the ketchup.
Yeah, the thing is, you know, but people can often say, see, that's what restaurants are doing. They're using our biology to get us to overeat. And you can also say, well, you know, I think that's the exact same thing your grandmother did to make you like her pasta. She put sugar in it, there was fat in it, there was salt in it. And it's the exact same thing that we do when we have people over dinner parties, so that they don't leave saying, man, I'll never eat there again. You know, we use salt, butter, and sugar to make that stuff taste good, too.
So what do you say when people are looking at you and they're desperate? They're saying, hey, how do I turn this thing off? How do I make this better for me when I go out to eat?
Well, there's four steps that I suggest. The first thing is they have to find out what is their biggest dietary danger zone. Now, there's a number of them out there. I mean, it could be meal stuffing for one person. It could be snack grazing for another. It could be restaurant indulging for a third, or it could be desktop dashboard dining for a fourth, and so on. But for each of these sort of dietary danger zones, what you want to do is figure out just three small things that you can do that can help you eat just a little bit less each day. We call them 100-calorie changes. And I mean, it's one thing some of the things I've written in a lot of my papers, I identify some of these things are. But once you come up with these three small changes, like let's say, for instance, that your problem is meal stuff and you eat too much at meals. Well, one easy solution is to not serve family style, because we find that if you take, let's say, the pasta or the meat or the potatoes and simply serve them, you know, keep that on the counter, and you get up every time you want seconds or thirds, we find the typical person ends up eating about 30% less. I mean, they end up serving themselves about 30% less if they have to do something like that. And it's a very easy way to kind of keep yourself from eating thirds and fourths while you're waiting for your family
tip.
To finish.
Right there, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a great
Similarly,
tip.
If you have problems with snack grazing, well, a small change you can make is say, hey, you know, I'm not going to deny myself from ever eating a snack in my life, but let me just come up with a rule. Let me say, I can have any snack I want to as long as I first have a piece of fruit before I eat that snack. Well, we find that this is crazy, but if somebody kind of makes that promise to themselves, they end up eating a whole lot fewer calories and snacks because either they say, hey, look, I can't find any fruit right now, so I guess I'm just going to have to skip my snack. Or in some cases, they actually, after eating a piece of fruit, say, you know, I'm not hungry anymore. And just come up with some small rules like this that are relevant to the one dietary danger zone that's most vexing to you at the time is the greatest way to do it.
Well, Dr. Brian Wansink, we're going to have to cut it right there, but I'll send people to your website, mindlesseating.org. That's a great place to start. You have a lot of material there. Thanks so much for being on Outdoor Fitness with me today.
Absolutely.
And your book is called Mindless Eating, and the website, once again, is mindlesseating.org. Don't forget about my show, Outdoor Fitness with Tina Vindham, on Lyme Healthy Living with a Twist, Sirius Channel 114 at lyme.com.